Welcome to Section 1 in Reproductive Anatomy. In this section, we will provide an overview of the female reproductive organs. Let's get started. Here is a table of the basic female reproductive organs. We will start here with the uterus. This image demonstrates an anterior view of the uterus and can be found in Section 1 of your Reproductive Anatomy text. Notice how a portion of the uterine wall is transected in this image. This allows us to see important parts so we can highlight them. Specifically, these three layers: the perimetrium on the outside, the myometrium, the muscle on the inside, and then the endometrium, the innermost layer. Going back to the table, we can see these layers listed right here: the endometrium, which is the mucosal layer, the myometrium, which is the muscularis layer, and the perimetrium, which is the serosal layer. So going back to this image, if you look at the myometrium and see that thick musculature there, that allows contraction of the uterus. And this inner layer, the endometrium, grows and sheds with each menstrual cycle. So this is what causes the bleeding, this endometrial layer. So the endometrium is clinically important because of menses, as we just discussed. There are numerous pathologies, though, that involve the uterus. Here are some major examples. There are fibroids. These are growths of the myometrium. You could say a myometrial tumor. Another pathology is endometriosis. And endometriosis occurs when endometrial tissue is growing outside of the uterine cavity. And of course, if the uterus isn't functioning correctly, there can be infertility. But there are many reasons that infertility can occur. This figure describes the menstrual cycle and can be found in reproductive physiology. I just wanted to again emphasize that the endometrial layer is right here, and it grows and sheds during the menstrual cycle, as you can see here. Now, we mentioned that endometriosis occurs when endometrial tissue develops outside the uterine cavity. This type of tissue right here can be found over here in the ovary, or it can be found in the peritoneal cavity. And since endometrial tissue grows and sheds with each cycle, then in endometriosis, this tissue, wherever it's located in the body, will grow and then bleed in these patients. So growth and bleeding in the peritoneal cavity over here, or growth and bleeding in the ovary over here. Now, this growth and bleeding in places where endometrial tissue does not belong can be very painful. And fibroids are involved with the myometrium, and they can be at different places within the myometrium. For example, it can be up next to the endometrium, right here, so just underneath the mucosal layer. This would be called a submucosal fibroid. Or they can be right up next to the serosal layer, right here, the perimetrium. This would be called a subserosal fibroid. Or they can simply be deep in the myometrium, as indicated with this one. And again, regarding infertility, recall that a zygote needs to implant in a healthy uterus to be viable. And if the uterus is structurally unfit to host a zygote and a fetus, then the patient can experience infertility. Now that we've covered the uterus, let's talk about the ovaries. The ovaries store oocytes. And with each menstrual cycle, a secondary oocyte will develop and be released into the peritoneal cavity. So going back to this image, we have the ovary right here, and a secondary oocyte will be released. I'll just write secondary. Now, it's very important to recognize that this is released into the peritoneal cavity. It just floats there. And then it gets picked up by the fimbriae of the fallopian tube, and then goes up here. Now, this highlights a very important point anatomically, and that's this idea. There's an opening from the vagina that actually connects to the peritoneal cavity. This means that in various gynecological procedures, fluid can be sent through the vagina and end up in the peritoneal cavity. And this is a normal thing. So if contrast is sent through here, and then there's imaging and we see all this fluid here in the peritoneal cavity, you think, whoa, that's crazy, but actually it's normal. And also, it's just kind of crazy that this little secondary oocyte right here is just free floating in the peritoneal cavity for a time. Now let's focus more on that oocyte really quick. This is a figure demonstrating oogenesis. This can be found in the reproductive physiology chapter. We won't talk about oogenesis here, but just keep in mind that the ovaries are involved in this entire process. This figure is also found in reproductive physiology, and it shows the ovary. And notice that the secondary oocyte right here is released from the ovary. So now that we've covered the uterus and the ovaries, let's do a question to apply what you've learned so far. A 23-year-old female patient volunteers for a research study. As part of the study, instruments are inserted through the vagina into the uterine cavity where a sample of tissue from the uterine wall is obtained. The sample is examined under a microscope, which reveals two distinct histological layers of the uterine wall. What two layers are most likely seen under the microscope? Hopefully you noticed that the sample was taken from the inside of the vagina, which means it's the luminal layer, which is also called the endometrium. So the endometrium is labeled right here. It's this innermost layer. So the sample would have been taken from here. But the question asks what two layers are most likely seen under the microscope. So we've got the endometrium, and we should be thinking of the one just beneath it, the myometrium. So if a sample is taken and you get two histological layers, you should be thinking of the myometrium and the endometrium. And going back to the question, what two layers are most likely seen under the microscope? The endometrium and myometrium. So once again, the ovaries release the secondary oocyte, and if there's anything wrong with the ovaries or the menstrual cycle, there can be infertility. Now let's talk about the fallopian tubes. The fallopian tubes have fimbriae, and these facilitate the secondary oocyte into the tube. And within the tube, there are cilia to facilitate the zygote to get into the uterus. So the fimbriae bring the oocyte into the tube, and then the cilia, which I'll just demonstrate right here, will carry the secondary oocyte to the uterus this way. But what if the cilia were broken or not present? That would mean that the secondary oocyte would come into the fallopian tube and may perhaps get fertilized and become a zygote, but it wouldn't actually be able to make it to the uterus. It would just sit here in the tube. It would stay here and grow. Dysfunctional or absent cilia would lead to an ectopic pregnancy. Now going back to this table, notice that for the notes regarding fallopian tube, I have written an STI. And this is because sexually transmitted diseases can damage the cilia. And with that, there would be dysmotility. In other words, the zygote cannot be transported to the uterine cavity, which would lead to an ectopic pregnancy. Now let's talk about the cervix. The cervix is located right here. It's the most distal portion of the uterus. And cervical cancer would be located in this region and can actually spread to the surrounding anatomical structures, including the uterus and vagina. So regarding pathological tie-ins, cancer is one of the most important parts of the cervix. Another thing that can happen to the cervix is get infected. So an STI or cervicitis, inflammation of the cervix. And you can imagine if there's inflammation here, that the cervix would be very tender. So regarding the cervix, just know that it's the most distal part of the uterus, and it's the location of cervical cancer, hence the name, or cervicitis, which occurs as a result of an STI. Now let's talk about the hymen. The hymen is located in the distal vagina, and it's a circumferential fibrous band with a central clearing. On this image, the hymen would be down here. And on this image, the hymen would be down here. Now normally, it has a central clearing. And as I've shown here with this little circle, there is a central clearing. Now during intercourse, the hymen is typically ruptured and bleeding occurs. And of course, this would be the first time the patient has intercourse. So on the table, I have written that it can be ruptured during the first vaginal intercourse. Now clinically, if the hymen is imperforate, meaning it doesn't have any clearing, then the patient can develop what's called hematocolpos, which means blood will accumulate in the vagina and the uterus. So going back to this sagittal image, if we put the hymen right here without a central clearing, then we can imagine that when the patient has menstrual cycles, the endometrium, right here, will grow and shed as normal. Then the blood would leave down this direction, but instead of exiting the vagina, it'll just build up because it can't leave because of the imperforate hymen. So over time, with several menstrual cycles, the vagina will fill up with blood and so will the uterus. This is called hematocolpos. Now that we've covered all these very important structures on the table, let's do a question to tie in everything that you've learned so far. A 17-year-old female presents to the physician for crampy abdominal pain with menses. This pain has been progressing and worsening with the last two menstrual cycles. She and her partner have never failed to use condoms. Menarche occurred at age 11, and menses have been regular with moderate flow. Hysteroscopy is performed and reveals no abnormalities from the vaginal canal up through the uterine cavity. Which of the following may be the cause of the pain? So hopefully you notice that everything is normal from the lumen of her vagina and the uterus, and that's based on the hysteroscopy. If there are no visual abnormalities from the vaginal canal to the uterine cavity, then which of the following can we rule out? Well, a submucosal fibroid would be visible from the uterine cavity, because that's just beneath the endometrium. So hysteroscopy would have shown that. So we can cross out A. And again, a submucosal fibroid would be right here, and that would be obvious. Now let's go down to C, cervicitis. Now cervicitis is not likely because we are told that everything looked normal from the vaginal canal through the uterine cavity, and this includes the cervix. So if there was inflammation of the cervix, hysteroscopy would have seen that. So we know that everything from here up through the uterine cavity is normal. Another reason we don't think she has cervicitis is the fact that she has a very low risk of sexually transmitted infections, because she always uses protection. They've never failed to use condoms. So we can cross off C. Now what about the imperforate hymen? Would the hysteroscope be able to go through the vaginal canal if the hymen was imperforate? No, it would not. So we can cross off choice D. Another reason we don't think it's an imperforate hymen is she had menses. And if her hymen were imperforate, she wouldn't have this bleeding. So this leaves us with endometriosis, which is the correct answer. And going back to the table, recall that endometriosis is endometrial tissue found outside the endometrium. So it makes sense that the uterine cavity would be normal. So if this endometrial tissue is found outside the uterine cavity, and over here is where it's causing pain, or over here, then it makes sense that the uterine cavity would look normal, which is what we found with hysteroscopy. In the question stem, it also stated that she has pain with every menses and it's getting worse. And this cyclical pain fits the idea of endometriosis. It grows with each menstrual cycle and then bleeds, grows and bleeds. So of the options given, endometriosis is the most likely. And that concludes the section.